I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both. Today we speak to author Tim Marshall about the importance of flags. Seven Nation Army got an amazing lo-fi soul makeover courtesy of British funksters Nostalgia 77 in 2005. Why are flags so important? Why do people get so passionate about them? Aren't they just little bits of cloth with some colours on?
Yes, and those little bits of colours arranged in a certain way speak to people, and people speak back to the flag, and it's a two-way relationship, because if that flag is supposed to represent you, then it represents your history, what you want for the future. It represents now, it represents everybody, it's supposed to represent everybody around you. If you happen to like your country, then there is the embodification of it up there. And so you're not really looking at just a piece of cloth, you're looking at your what you might regard as your identity.
Some flags are much more iconic than others. Are there any rules for designing a good flag, or a flag being accepted by the people it's supposed to represent?
The guy that did the South African flag for the modern era told me that a flag should be recognisable even if it was on a postage stamp. Mm-hmm. So you've got to look at it and think, yep, that's what it is. And that's one of the rules. Primary colors is another one. That's why you tend to see very, very few, you know, pink flags, for example. Ones that don't fade at sea, which is why the Dutch flag, for example, which had orange in it to begin with, was changed to red, because people thought, whose ship is that? What is this faded orange color? Etc., etc. So there are these rules. And also another one is that a child should be able to draw it.
It's interesting you talk about the South African flag, because to me, I understand the symbolism of it, but to me, it looks like a dog's dinner. There's too much going on.
You'll have to take that up with Fred Ronald, who was a charming, wonderful man who designed it. He was trying to pull together the different peoples of the modern state so that they could all be represented, and with a directional arrow pointing them towards the future. Now, you might think it's a dog's dinner. Nelson Mandela liked it. That's good enough for me.
No, fair enough. Right, yeah. I was going to say his opinion trumps mine, but that expression has different connotations in 2017. Here's a flag which everybody universally in this country absolutely loves and adores. It's the Canadian flag. And that is a very new one, isn't it? It's only like the mid-1960s. Before that, the British flag was stuck in the top left-hand corner, and it was red. How do countries go about building, creating a new identity and manifesting that through a flag when they don't necessarily have a rainbow coalition of people to represent?
Well, I think the Canadians are a good example, isn't it? I mean, the stark primary colours with a symbol that they all immediately recognise, it doesn't divide the French speakers from the English speakers. It doesn't divide upon racial grounds. And it is something around you can coalesce around it. Another example in a much more difficult place is the Lebanese flag. Lebanon, if you were to put a religious symbol on the Lebanese flag, you would have a civil war within days, because the Shia, the Sunni, the Druze, the Christians, etc., would not accept one particular religious symbol on it, which is why there's a cedar tree on it. Lebanon is famous for its cedar trees up in the Shouf Mountains. Here is something that everyone loves. You go up to the mountains, everyone can share it. So this very, very divided country can at least have a flag around which you can coalesce. So that's how you partially create identity. The New Zealand flag's interesting. You know, last year they had the referendum, 2 years ago perhaps, to replace the New Zealand flag, which of course has the Union Jack on it. And it was up against only one other flag that won a competition, a black flag with a white fern on it, to represent the country, but it was defeated. They decided to stay with what they've got. Again, I think if they had chosen it, that would have been a flag around which everybody could coalesce. For example, some of the Maori might look at the New Zealand flag, which has got a small flag up there of the people that came and basically overtook their country. So, you know, there are problems. Now, I also think it's better to understand that, recognize it, get past it, and unify and coalesce, and through that get strength together, but without ever forgetting the history. But they stayed with it. I'm trying to think of other examples that pull you together. The stars and stripes, you know, each one of those stars represents the state. So there are 50 stars. If there's going to be another one, there'll be 51 stars. The stripes are 13 for the 13 original colonies that broke free from Britain. So when you look at it, you're looking at their history and what they stand for, what they're supposed to stand for, freedom and unity through the individuals. In fact, their motto is from many, one.
Talking about symbols and people who were expressly talking about freedom, Bob Marley was definitely somebody who espoused the virtues of not just political freedom, but also emancipating yourself from mental slavery. Are you a little bit of a reggae?
Numbers ourselves shall free our minds.
There we go, sir. Tim, are you a little bit of a reggae head? Because you've chosen A Small Axe by Bob Marley as your song this week.
A little bit of a reggae head.
Why aren't you
equally,
more of one?
Equally a star head.
Why are... Okay, yeah, fine. Yeah,
No, I mean, some of the early 60s stuff, Baba Brooks Band and all that, I just love. And it's then, I mean, then you get this middle as they move towards classical reggae. And I'm even, you know, a bit of dub with you, Roy. But no, I'm pretty mainstream. Marley, for me, completely a standout from any other reggae star, for his charisma, for his humanity, for his songwriting abilities, and his sheer magnetism. Marley really, really stands out from everybody else. So I'm only a little bit of a reggae head, you know. It's there's a lot of other stuff around.
Marley's a really interesting character because he's somebody who's absolutely transcended religion and nationality. So he almost is this icon, and you go to many places throughout the world and, you know, you always get your kind of slightly alternative bit of a town or a city, and you'll see flags and banners, and invariably there'll be like a Bob Marley kind of face on Rasta colours.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the many things that really put Jamaica on the global map, and he is He's got to be Jamaica's best known figure. Well, Usain Bolt now, maybe.
Usain Bolt, contemporary though, isn't it? Is Usain Bolt still going to be as iconic in 10, 15 years' time? I'd probably doubt, but definitely he's up there in the trio of famous and influential Jamaicans.
Yeah, put it this way, we will not be rerunning all his wonderful videos of him winning the 100 metres, but we might well still be rerunning videos of Bob Marley singing. He just absolutely, you know, he had something. He had something that allowed him to transcend all sorts of things. Even as a young person, I was struck by, if he's going on about Jah Love, he's not that far removed from some geezer with a tambourine or a guitar singing about Jesus wants you for a sunbeam. You know, they're both, they are both sort of praising the Lord. It's just that one's seriously more cool than the other, and you'd never get people who are chanting along to Jah Love chanting along to Jesus wants me. But you know, there was just something he had, an attitude, a state of mind, an absolute magnetism. I remember, you know, I'm old enough to remember when he first burst onto the scene in 75 in the UK, and it was like, wow, what is this? And yeah, it opened up a world.
Talking about the world and getting back onto the topic of vexillology, which is a hard thing to say.
It's a great word.
It's very easy to associate some countries with flags. But here's the thing for you, Tim. Which flags do you think do not suit their country? Which flags you look and go, that does not say insert name of country to me?
Nigeria?
Because it's got a white stripe.
Well, it's just dull, isn't it? I mean, no offence, Nigerians. I know Nigerians who agree with me. It's just dull. It's just green and then white and then green. It's like, I know that the green represents the wonderful, beautiful colours of the lushness, but it's just boring. You know, when you look at that flag, it doesn't scream Nigeria at you. That's the only one that springs to mind, but there are quite a few. I mean, there's not that many really top flags about, you know. I like the Macedonian one myself. That's pretty cool. Oh, and the Seychelles, it's just a complete rainbow. It's wonderful.
Describe the Macedonian flag to the listener.
It's a sunburst of, you know, it's got a sun in the middle and then the rays radiating out from it. It's very un-European in that respect. And there's a very good quick story about it. There is no country called Macedonia. It's the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, because Greece has a region called Macedonia. So if they allowed, when they broke free from Yugoslavia, if they allowed Macedonia to call itself officially that, so they got it stopped by the European Union. And secondly, the original flag was Alexander the Great's flag. And they said, no, Alexander the Great is Greek. And the Macedonians said, no, he's Macedonian. So again, they lent on everybody. And the flag is Macedonia's second choice, because both countries claim ownership of Alexander the Great. So, you know, this is a great example of not just the power, but the politics of flags.
Let's talk. It's nothing which I love about flags is looking at, let's say, Ecuador, Colombia, Venezuela. And at first you look at those flags and you go, wait a minute, they're all the same, or the Central American republics. Tell us some of the stories around countries that have rather similar flags to their neighbours.
Well, the example you've given is because there used to be something called Grand Colombia, G-R-A-N, Grand Colombia in Spanish. But it couldn't exist. It was just too vast with two different areas and factions of people. And so it split into four different countries who now have very similar colours on their flags, Venezuela, for example. One thing I found interesting about Latin America was, unlike Africa, a lot of them came up with, when they became independent, a lot of them came up with very European-type flags. And this is just a personal theory. In Africa, colonialism and the nation-states was a relatively short period. And so most of the cultures, languages, food, etc., and to an extent, some of the religions, remained intact. So when they threw off the colonial yoke, they were hardly about to choose European-type symbols. And that's why I think you don't see that many tricolours and there are a lot more colorful flags, and you have the red, gold, and green for the Pan-African colors. Whereas the Latin Americans, the people there became almost indigenous, if you know what I mean. You know, they were there for 300 or 400 years, the Spanish and the Portuguese. So by the time they became independent, the languages, the culture, the food, and the shared history was actually looking back to the old country, which is why I think that the Latin American flags tend to be a lot more European in their outlook.
Lastly, sir, which flag has been the most influential on subsequent countries gaining independence, would you say?
Good question.
I'm full of good questions, mate.
Yeah.
The reason I've got a couple,
I'm not full of good answers. Well, again, look, you know, I mean, these are questions I haven't always considered, and so I have two answers off the top of my head. One is the American flag, because for all its failings, the American state, the shining city on a hill, etc., etc., does stand for freedom. I mean, you know, we can talk about its failings till the cows come home, but the idea of America, the idea of equality under law, the idea of freedom of religion, all that is inherent in the flag. And I think that all around the world, many peoples who are still suffering under various forms of oppression and dictatorship still look to that flag as an idea of what can be achieved. Not necessarily always the reality of it, but the idea is very important. The other one is the Ethiopian flag, because it was so influential on the design of the African flags as they gained independence, because that was the one country that was not fully colonized and, you know, actually beat the Italians. And so when a lot of the African countries became independent, the colors of the Ethiopian flag influenced the colors of the now independent states.
Tim Marshall, thank you for coming on to Friday 15, sharing your love of brightly coloured bits of cloth, Bob Marley, a little bit of reggae, much more ska. Your book is called Worth Dying For, The Power and the Politics of Flags. I presume you can get it from Amazon at any good bookshop.
If it's not there, it may not be a good bookshop, yes.
And just very quickly, Tim, tell us where people can catch up with you on social media.
Oh, iTwittius is what I witter away on Twitter, iTwittius, and thewhatandthewhy.com is a website about international relations, basically.
There you go, we've done it. Perfect.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Reason, and we know the reason why you put on those ears.
Cameo's classic Word Up was covered by Scottish band Gunn. Taken from their album Swagger, it was released on July 1st, 1994 and reached number 8 in the UK singles chart. Teardrops appeared on Womack & Womack's fourth studio album, Conscience, in 1988. The songwriters Cecil and Linda Womack also served as the producers of the track alongside Chris Blackwell. hope you enjoyed this week's show. Don't forget, you can follow the show's progress on Facebook by simply typing in Friday 15. You can also find us on Twitter, where you can follow me, where I'm at Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. Now, every Thursday, you can jump onto Twitter and tweet me and nominate a song for me to put into this week's Friday 15. iTunes reviews, folks, are extremely important. They're the lifeblood of any podcast. Please go onto iTunes and write us a glowing review. And don't forget, finally, you can email me, where I'm Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D, @gmail.com. See you all again in 7 days' time for more good music and great conversation.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.